This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last month, the nonpartisan group Rock the Vote released a star-studded video parody of Lil Jon's Turn Down for What, featuring public figures who explained why they planned to vote in the midterm elections.
All right, there are voting booths from the windows over to the walls. And rock the vote, dude. Start.
Thank you.
Occupied. Sorry, we're in here voting.
Wait, you're Lena Dunham, and you're celebrity fitness trainer Tracy Anderson.
Yeah, this is how we do it in Hollywood. We vote with our trainers.
Man, can you sign my ballot?
Oh, yeah. Tracy would probably like you to sign her.
Maybe my ballot, please.
When I'm done voting.
Okay, we're going to vote now.
All right. Well, bye.
Bye.
I'm Darren, and I'm turning out for education.
I'm EJ, and I'm turning out for marriage equality.
My name is Lil Lena, and I'm turning out for reproductive rights.
All right, while that might get millennials out of their seats, it remains to be seen whether or not it gets them out to the polls. Americans are notorious non-voters, especially in the midterms. So today, as we collectively contemplate what we want from our leadership, and some of us vote accordingly, we're going to explore why that exercise in direct democracy doesn't resonate with everyone. We'd like to hear from actual voters and non-voters as we carry on this conversation. Is voting something that you consider a responsibility? If you're not voting, why not? Are you trying to make a statement? Do you feel alienated? Or is it just apathy? Or you just can't be bothered to go vote? Give us a call. Explain yourself. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. If you could just push a button on your phone, maybe that would get you out to vote. Well, you can just call us and tell us. Again, 1-800-639-2211. Or post on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Matt Dickinson is a political science professor at Middlebury College and the author of a political blog called Presidential Power, and he joins us today for the discussion. Welcome back to the show, Professor Dickinson.
Glad to be here, Jane.
So some of us may remember Rock the Vote from the mid-90s when that nonprofit partnered with MTV and worked really hard to get young people registered to vote. It marks some successes. It says that it's had a lot of success with voter registration among young people, especially in the 90s, and it's always used young hip musicians and celebrities to encourage voting. Do you think it has any impact?
Probably not. unfortunately, it came out at a time when we experienced the lowest voting turnout in the nation's history. And subsequently, we've done a lot of studies that try to measure the impact of different strategies for getting people out to vote. And that's not one of them that seems to work very well.
So you're not seeing that video make any splash on campus at Middlebury College? I mean, that Lil Jon song was ubiquitous for a while. I can imagine people playing it on YouTube in their dorms.
Well, you hit the nail on the head in your intro. They were probably more likely to dance to it than they were to be motivated to vote. And that's the problem here, right? We don't want to entertain people. We want to give them a reason to think that their vote matters.
So how would you do that?
The most important thing to do in increasing vote is to make people feel they're part of a larger group, a larger movement. You want to embed them in a social context. So if you try to approach the vote as, if you don't vote, X candidate will lose or my policy will not pass, something you support, that's appealing to them to an individual basis as a rational actor. Well, guess what? Whether they vote or not probably isn't going to make any difference at all on whether their candidate wins or that policy passes. So that doesn't work. The chances of that I'm going to affect by my vote, the presidential election, for instance, is about 1 in 60 million. I'm more worried about getting Ebola than I am about affecting the outcome of a presidential election. So you have to motivate them another way. You have to embed them by appealing to their participation as part of a larger group norm. And there's a couple of ways of doing that. One is to shame them, basically say, your friends are voting. The second thing is to expose them to the discussion of politics, whether it's at the family dinner table, it's with your friends at college, participating in a larger group that's involved in some campaign-related activity. All of those are very effective.
So in fact, perhaps that simple little I voted sticker might have a bigger effect than these get out the vote campaigns if you see all of your friends walking around wearing an I voted sticker?
That's the key. It's got to be all of your friends. So, for instance, and again, keep in mind that when we're trying to get the vote out, we're trying to think about the most cost-effective means of doing that if I'm on a part of the campaign. How do I get to spend my money and invest it? And it turns out this political scientists have been kind of late to the party. Political parties knew this for decades, which is canvassing, knocking on doors was very effective. And then a funny thing happened with the advent of television in the 60s and 70s and 80s. They began to go away from canvassing and relying on television ads, and participation dropped. Well, in the last three or four national elections, they've gone back to their roots, knocking on doors. And it turns out that's incredibly cost effective. So one study estimates for every additional $29 a campaign spends on knocking on a door, you gain one additional vote. People want to be asked face to face. Please, I need your vote. And they'll do it.
We're talking today about voting. We're talking about why Americans are apathetic when it comes to turning out to vote, especially in midterm elections, which, of course, we're in right now. And if you have a thought, if you want to share your own personal reflections, why are you voting or not voting? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. You can tell us what you think would work better. Again, 1-800-639-2211. Stephen's on the line with us from Stratford. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead. What are your thoughts?
Hi. It's a two-part thing. I think that there should be a $25 fine if you don't vote. But I think that there should be a box which says none of the above. So that if you vote for none of the above and 50% of the people do, then the people who ran lost and they can't run again and we have to get new people.
Ooh, and so that would work for you. Are you voting, Stephen? Do you mind if I ask you?
I always vote. Everybody I vote for loses, but I always vote. there's one other thing that the $25 should go to only third parties. It shouldn't go to the Republicans and the Democrats. It should go to third parties so that we encourage more people to run.
All right, so now we're getting into a little campaign finance issue, too. Stephen, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. Fernando's calling in from Poultney. Hi, Fernando. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. How are you? Good afternoon, excuse me.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm intentionally not voting today.
How come?
Well, show me the results where change has occurred. The poverty rate is still terrible in this country. The problems are mounting. I'm old enough where I haven't seen any solutions, real solutions, that people would want occur because of voting. And I've lived in foreign countries. I've visited foreign countries. I've been politically active. I've been a union organizer. I've served as an air marshal. I served in the Army. I don't see any change from voting.
Fernando, what do you think would work if not voting? I mean, obviously, what you're finding is that it's just you don't feel like it has any connection to what you want. So what would work for you?
Well, what the brother was just talking about sounded like a fine idea, but organizing people, getting people in the streets. I was in the climate march in New York. I have some concerns about it. It was tailored too much to the elites and not going right to the UN. But organizing will do it. Getting people interested. People have to see some results from the activity some victories from the activity they engage in. Now, they also must be made to understand that we don't always achieve victories. I've been in union elections on both sides where I've lost. So, there's some history and demonstration of value has to be done with folks so they'll engage.
Fernando, I appreciate your call. Thanks for sharing that with us. Matt Dickinson, what do you think about what Fernando's saying? He's not voting because he doesn't see any connection between voting and change.
So actually, your callers have raised several great points. So let's start with Fernando's point about, let's call it the alienated voter. Interestingly, when we survey people and talk about their feeling of attitudes towards politics, people who express alienation towards the political system are actually no less likely to vote than people who believe that the political system is working. So alienation in and of itself does not seem to be a contributing factor to low voting turnout on a general phase. Now, it may in individual cases. The other issue that came up was fining people for not voting. And in fact, some nations do that. It's a nominal fine, but that gets to some people, nations will actually stamp your identification card as did not vote. And that actually works. And it works because not so much the money, but again, it gets to our point of voting as an indication of belonging to a larger group movement. And that's where I think Fernando's right, where he talks about being part of the climate change. When people feel that their vote is embedded in a larger social context, they are more likely to act on that belief than if they are trying to view their vote as a rational exercise designed to achieve a particular outcome that is isolated from this broader social movement. So a couple of great points by your callers there.
Yeah, and we have a lot of listeners who've been weighing in on social media this morning as well. On the non-voting side, Allison says, I'd vote if there were a candidate I supported. And Gabby says, not a single candidate appeals to me, unfortunately. Sam says, nope, why should I have to choose the lesser of two evils? I will never vote again. But a lot of people say they are voting. It is a civic responsibility. Scott says, I voted because it's simple. I want my voice to be heard, and I'm willing to make the effort to make sure it happens. Skip says, what motivates me most this time around is the divisiveness perpetuated by the one-party rule we have now. Mark says, polls were packed at 7 a.m. when I showed up at my polling place to vote. My wife said they were still full when she was there at 8:30, so big voter turnout wherever he is. Lindsay says, I'm predicting a bigger-than-usual turnout in Hyde Park. The ballot includes a contentious $18.3 million bond measure to renovate the elementary school that's ignited a heated debate on Front Porch Forum. It'll be interesting to see what happens moving forward. And what about that, Professor Dickinson? I mean, why aren't people more motivated to come out for issues that are happening in their own backyards than they are during a presidential election cycle?
So presidential election cycles, because, again, the social context exposes you to more information related to the election, tends to attract a higher turnout. About 60% of eligible voters on average now in recent decades, whereas in the midterm election, you lose about 20% of that. It's about 40%. But what's interesting is presidential turnout varies quite a bit based on, for instance, do I have a historic candidacy of Barack Obama in 2008 attracted the vote of people who otherwise wouldn't vote. In midterm elections, it's relatively stable. It's about 40%. And those are a couple of your callers got to this point, your people who are texting in. They're habitual voters. They're people who have inculcated this sense of civic duty. And they view voting as part of your citizenship requirement. And again, that gets to the socialization process. For all the talk about important issues that should be motivating people, most people, Joe and Jane Sixpack, aren't really paying that much attention to a lot of these issues. And they're simply not going to be motivated on the basis of an issue alone unless it's embedded in some larger tradition of voting.
Yeah, you mentioned the people that always vote. Catherine says, always vote even if you do a write-in. Otherwise, they think you don't care. And Vicky says, always vote. Even a blank ballot is meaningful. We're talking today about why people vote or don't. And we're also going to look at how groups are working together. Get out the vote. We heard that Rock the Vote video earlier. Well, the Vermont Chamber of Commerce is one of the organizations that's doing something different this year. Betsy Bishop is president of the organization, and she joins me for a few moments now. Hi, Betsy. Nice to talk with you.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So usually the Vermont Chamber of Commerce funds a super PAC. Why this year did you decide to spend your money on working on a Get Out the Vote campaign instead?
We thought that after seeing the primary turnout at 8%, we thought that that was quite low, and really believe that some of the issues that are very important about the economy and job creation in Vermont need attention and need people who believe in those types of issues to get out and vote. So we decided to use some of our PAC money to try to affect that change.
When you do a Get Out the Vote campaign, how do you try to encourage people to vote the way you want them to, though, which I assume you do, even if the idea is you want people to vote, you still have priorities that you're hoping they will vote for?
Absolutely. So our efforts are focused on jobs in the economy, and the notion is that we are encouraging folks to just go and vote. You know, yes, we want these people to go vote if they believe in our issues, but ultimately, you know, listening to the callers that were calling in about the disengaged voter or the alienated voter, what we really want is to see that process work. And that is where, you know, this country has the ability to be able to do that. And, you know, there are all of these debates going on. There's candidate debates. There's lots of nasty ads going on in other states. And I think Vermont is kind of fortunate that we don't have all of that here. And if we can help and do our part to get people out to vote, we would be encouraged by that.
What does your money normally go to support? What kinds of candidates? And do you support certain political parties?
Sure. We are a bipartisan PAC, and we have a long history of supporting candidates in, I would say, all sides, not just both sides. It started about 20 years ago, and the notion then was that we didn't want to be a traditional PAC. We wanted to try to select about 10 races that we could make a difference only in the state house and sort of act as a campaign research center in that way and help those 10 candidates. And the Vermont Chamber did that for about a decade and then moved into a more traditional PAC role where we actually selected candidates that we believe supported our issues through surveys, their voting records, things like that, and gave funding directly to candidates in that way. And then this year we also, in addition to doing that, we did that in a much lighter way, but added to it this Get Out the Vote campaign. And we recognize that, you know, TV advertising isn't the only piece and the only way to get at that. So this year we added to that quite a good social media push, which we got some very good feedback and good exposure for.
That's Betsy Bishop. She's the president of the Vermont Chamber of Commerce. Thank you so much for talking with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're talking about voting, and we're hearing from some of you today about why you are participating or not. You can share your thoughts with us. Go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition to send us a note, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Matt Dickinson is a political science professor at Middlebury College, and he writes a political blog called Presidential Power. He's helping us talk about why so few people vote on Election Day or before Election Day. We're hearing from some of you on that score. You can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can find us on Facebook and post your thoughts there. And let's go to the calls again. We have quite a few people who want to share their thoughts. Alec is calling in from Montpelier. Go ahead, Alec.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. I'm 27 years old, and I voted this morning, so I'm representing the millennials, doing my duty. I'm totally in favor of public shaming people, fining them for not voting. I'm glad that was mentioned, but I'm also in favor of paying people to vote and celebrating it. And by that, I'm wondering, and my question for the guests is, why is it not a national holiday on voting day? Why are there not parades and give people a paid holiday to celebrate this sort of national movement that we should all be doing?
I mean, I have
the day off of work for Columbus Day, but not for voting day.
I hear you. Let's put that to Professor Dickinson. What do you think?
Well, technically, Alec should be able to get the day off under federal law. They can't prevent him from voting, and he can't be penalized for that. Now, the reality might be that his boss is going to fire his ass if he doesn't stay on work. Sorry about for my French. But other countries do have national holidays. Some arguments have been made for moving elections from Tuesdays to weekends. We've had experiences at the local level with weekend voting on special elections. It has actually increased turnout all that much. But again, studies based on comparisons with other countries think there might be a marginal benefit to having a national holiday or a weekend voting. So there are ways that gets to the notion of there are basically structural obstacles that are preventing some people from voting. That's one of the reasons when we look at who votes, not just how many people vote, but who, we see that as you go up the income ladder and you go up the education ladder, people are more likely to vote. And it's because they know how to overcome those structural obstacles more effectively than people with less education and less income.
Let's go to Sharon, who's in Waterbury Center, calling in. Hi, Sharon. Go ahead.
Hi there. My 80-year-old mother recently moved to Vermont to be near me. She grew up in Nazi Germany and came to this country about 60 years ago. She has hardly ever voted. She didn't even become a citizen till about 20 years ago. Yet she has often espoused negative opinions over politics over the years. And she wasn't going to bother to register to vote since she moved to Vermont. And I gave her grief about this, about her hypocrisy. And to my surprise, she has done a dramatic turnabout. Today, she was really excited to go and vote. She's marching off to the polls. And my lesson here is that it is all of our civic responsibilities to lean on our fellow citizens to go out and vote.
Sharon, thanks for your comments. Appreciate that. Boy, Matt, we're really hearing sort of that idea of having your friends, having the people who are close to you either shame you or talk about why they're voting, that is resonating with the callers that we're hearing from. Interesting to hear about that.
There's actually an interesting experiment done in which a Get Out the Vote group mailed a mailer to a subset of two groups of voters. And one of them, they got a standard, you should get out to vote because it's good for democracy. The other one, they said, you should get out to vote. And if you don't, I'm going to let your neighbors know. We're going to announce who voted and who didn't. Guess what? Turnout went up in the group that were threatened to be exposed as voting frauds. And that gets to your point. Social norms are so important. Inculcating that sense of voting as a civic duty at a very early age, so critical. And even when you're 80 years old, if you're surrounded by somebody who says you're a hypocrite, it's never too late to learn to vote.
So today, you know, when I woke up and, of course, checked Facebook, there was a little thing at the very top of Facebook saying, show us your photos of voting. Tell us what you're doing on election day. So that's a social media organization and some would point out a very commercial organization as well. But do you think that has any effect? I mean, when we talk about circles of friendship and circles of connection, is something like a Facebook promotion to tell people about your voting habits, is that going to resonate at all?
In theory, it should. And again, partly it depends on who else is on Facebook and what are they telling you about their voting habits as well. And a lot of the social network stuff, the promise has been greater so far than the empirical results in determining whether it's actually influencing the vote. Part of the reason, again, is a lot of the people who are religiously looking at elections through Facebook are people who are going to vote already. So it's difficult to tease out the independent impact of the social networking sites. But it should, in theory. Anything that sort of signals that your social identity is out of step with group norms is going to motivate you to try to do something to adjust that.
We're talking today about voting, and we're trying to get a bead on why people don't vote. I mean, under half of the voting age people in the U.S. don't vote during the midterms. So if you are among them, we're wondering why not. And we're hearing from Professor Matt Dickinson about some of the ways that actually work to get people to motivate to go to the polls or to vote early. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Again, you can post them at vpr.net. Just click on Vermont Edition or post on our Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Alan calling in from Burlington. Hi, Alan. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks. Frankly, I'm just kind of this is just a comment for your reaction. I'm kind of astonished that apparently there are people who care enough about issues and who are interested enough in the world around them to listen to VPR all day and not vote.
So, Matt, I mean, Alan, you don't count yourself among them. Do you vote?
Oh, I vote.
And you see a connection between being engaged in the issues of the day, listening to the news, trying to know what's happening in the world around you, and voting. You see that as a direct connection.
Well, to pay any attention, to know what's going on, and not to do even the smallest, maybe token gesture of participating in democracy just seems it seems deadened.
Alan, thanks for that thought. Matt Dickinson, what do you think?
Well, that's an interesting thing about the United States, in which we value political participation, and then we do not believe that the government should take steps to actively encourage that. So in many nations, you're actually automatically registered to vote by virtue of being a citizen, not in the United States. You have to take the steps to go out and do that. And although people who listen to NPR say this is a no-brainer, people who are out there struggling to make a living and have a variety of other issues they're dealing with, where's my next paycheck going? Did I remember to pick my kid up at the school? Did the dog get their shots? Voting suddenly doesn't seem all that important. And that, again, gets to the key point here. If you're going to increase voting, you've got to remove structural impediments to doing that. But you also have to embed it into a larger social process in which people are constantly reminded that other people are voting and they're voting for a particularly important reason.
So we got a note from a listener who calls him or herself professional, who wrote in and said, I'm a 28-year-old millennial and I am voting this afternoon. However, I don't appreciate the generalizations about my generation's lack of voting interest. Jane's comment about millennials getting up out of their seats was unwarranted. A terrible commercial starring Lena Dunham doesn't do that. And this is referring to we played a little bit of the Rock the Vote video with Lil Jon and Lena Dunham at the beginning of the show. What do you think about that, Matt Dickinson? I mean, what are the statistics actually tell us about how many young people are voting, and that idea that this listener at least feels like it's, you know, kind of an attack.
I appreciate the caller's concern, but frankly, Jane, you're right. And what's interesting about that Rock the Vote video is it turns out several members who participated in it didn't vote. But that's sort of beside the point. The reality is that millennials are less likely to vote than previous generation, next generation Y, or the baby boomers. And partly it's because they haven't established the habit of voting. Partly it's because, so for instance, many of my college students are not living where they're registered to vote. And taking the time to register to vote means thinking about the election beforehand. So I appreciate his comments, but the data is the data. The lowest turnout in this upcoming midterm election will undoubtedly be among 18 to 24-year-old people. And that's not an indictment of them as people. It's just the reality of their existence. It's more fluid. They're socially less connected and with other people who are voting, and they simply haven't acquired that habit of doing so.
Matt, before we let you go, you know, in the idea and celebration of all politics being local, there's a Middlebury College student running for election this year. He's actually taken a leave of absence. Has it galvanized students on campus, do you think?
It's become a topic of conversation. It's been great to see Calvin himself. I probably shouldn't endorse him publicly, but he's out there trying to inject some youthfulness, some vitality into the vote. I don't know if galvanized is the word, but it puts a face on an otherwise somewhat abstract vote. And again, the other thing to keep in mind is when we talk about voting turnout statistics, the down ticket races, you know, the state Senate and the House representatives in Vermont, the face-to-face contact is even more important there, the get out the vote. And I think in that sense, the Middlebury students' campaign is a potent reminder of what democracy is all about at the grassroots.
Well, and a reminder that the life of a college professor is never boring. Matt Dickinson has to go. He's a political science professor at Middlebury College, and he writes a political blog called Presidential Power. We appreciate your thoughts on the program today, Matt. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jane.
We are still talking about why you vote or why you don't vote today. We're going to hear from another Get Out the Vote organizer in the state, and we're hearing from a lot of you. We got a note from Jim who says, my wife and I became U.S. citizens this summer, and we are voting today in our first U.S. elections. For the 10 years that we were green card holders, we weren't allowed to vote in any election, including local ones. Even with a child in the public school system, we couldn't vote on the school budget. It's great to be a part of the democratic process again. And let's go to Victoria, who's calling in from Sharon. Hi, Victoria. Go ahead.
Hi. So I did vote. I also got a text from my child who's 19 and out of state at college who had wanted to vote but evidently didn't know how to get an absentee ballot. And then at the polls, I learned that another kid from our town who's extremely civic-minded and usually knows about that kind of thing also apparently called too late to get an absentee ballot. These are both 18, 19-year-old young people who passionately want to vote. And it seems to me there must be something that we can do to more effectively inform them about how to get an absentee ballot and how to get it in time that your vote can be registered. There are a million ways to do it. Their school could, the school they graduated from up here could maybe send a text or put something on Facebook to all of the kids who graduated last year saying this is how you do it, or we could do something with our town listserv. These are young people who, you know, if these two kids from the graduating class wanted to vote this badly but didn't know how, I bet there are others as well.
Yeah, Victoria,
we should make it much easier for them.
Point taken. I appreciate that. And actually, let's get Julia Michelle on the line with us. She is a campaign coordinator for the Vermont Public Interest Research Group, which does a lot of canvassing in the summertime, but also is working on Get Out the Vote campaigns this fall, specifically on college campus. So, Julia Michelle, first of all, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Jane.
So what about Victoria's point? Her child and another student in her town didn't know how to register out of state, get an absentee ballot. Is that something that you're hearing from college students is a problem?
Somewhat. You know, research into what gets young voters to the polls mirrors what grassroots groups like BPIRG have found over a bunch of our campaigns. And that's that you have to meet people where they're at. Seeing that the students that I worked with at UVM got moving, we set up an online voter registration page to make it easier for students to get registered to vote and then promoted that over email and hit the pavement with clipboards and flyers and through local events 2 weeks ago, we had Ben Cohen from Ben & Jerry's join an event called the Stampede to Vote, where voter registration forms actually ran out before the free ice cream.
That's unusual.
Yeah.
You know, but voter registration forms, somebody taking a form, and I understand there were also electronic forms that you were sharing with students, but taking a form and then actually going out to vote and then voting again and making it a habit are different things.
That's totally true. As one of your earlier callers mentioned, you know, growing the civic-minded student into a regular voter is something that we work to encourage. Young people especially are interested in voting about issues. And so the young student, the students that I've worked with and the University of Vermont organizers who helped put together a student march to vote last week, were really focused on what happens after the election. And so they see voting as being the first step towards having that kind of political impact.
When you're working on a Get Out the Vote campaign, how hard are you pushing VPIRG's policy initiatives, clean energy and things like that?
That's a great question. So I should first mention that VPIRG's a nonpartisan organization, so we don't endorse candidates. And our work on elections this fall really centered around getting young people registered to vote and to vote early. It's incredibly easy to get registered, and voting early can take place at the same time. So part of what we were doing in last week's student march to vote was to really highlight the ease of registration and voting early.
That's Julia Michelle. She's a campaign coordinator for the Vermont Public Interest Research Group. Julia, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you.
And we are talking about why people vote, why they don't vote. We're hearing from a lot of you on social media. Gary says one reason people don't vote is because they don't have confidence in the election system. In today's age, virtually all of our votes are counted by computers that aren't checked for accuracy. Programming errors and software bugs can result in incorrect vote counts, and this has happened, Gary says. Our state could institute robust auditing procedures on the vote counting machines, which would increase voter confidence and turnout. And let's hear from Nathan calling in from Newport. Hi, Nathan. Go ahead.
Hey there. Thank you for having me. Yeah, just on the topic of young voters, of young generation, of instant gratification, I believe that there is a low confidence in voting and seeing results, but also the ease of actually getting a vote in. And that kind of goes hand in hand with changing the voting date from a Tuesday to weekend, where younger generations, where they're trying to work a lot and pay off loans, can easily access voting booths and the such.
Nathan, I appreciate your call. Thank you for sharing that with us. You know, we're talking about why people aren't voting, some of the reasons, some of the obstacles perhaps to getting to the polls, or if it's apathy or if it's a protest vote. Let's go to Anne, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Anne. You're on the air.
Hi. My concern is that we know more about the sex life of politicians than their actual reasons for running and where they're taking us and what their philosophies are, their political philosophies, if indeed they have any. The other thing, you brought up so many great ideas. I love the holiday idea for voting. I think that's a wonderful idea. But, you know, the thing that really amazes me as an 80-something-year-old, that people do vote. They don't understand that the people at the primary level are eventually going to be the leaders and shakers of this world. And it always amazes me that more people don't participate in the primaries.
Yeah, and good point. A primary turnout way, way lower than actual election day, general election turnout. I appreciate that thought. You know, as we continue here thinking about voting on voting day, Rick says what discourages most people is that you only get to select one rich person over another rich person. And Barlow has an idea. Barlow thinks midterm elections in America should be abolished. Give a person 4 years to try to get something right as president and vote only every 4 years. I guess that would make a big change to the House of Representatives and to the Senate. But Barlow says midterm elections undermine democracy because people shouldn't have to get into such a lather every 2 years. Only fanatics come out to vote, not the majority. And Cager says, I'm a 53-year-old man. I will vote as I always do. But unfortunately, I have a feeling of futility when it comes to voting. It seems unfair to place the burden of the voting failure on apathy. Shaming voters hides the true root cause, which is the inability of Washington to make meaningful change. Thanks to all of you who've been sharing your thoughts with us. We appreciate you telling us why you vote, why you don't vote, and what you think would make a difference. You can stay tuned here to VPR for more election information. Tomorrow, we're going to be recapping the outcomes of today's voting, whether you vote or not. There will be some changes in Washington and some results to chew on from Vermont's contests. And we'll talk about what happened in the contentious New Hampshire races as well. And of course, we have complete coverage this evening starting at 7 p.m. You're listening to Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The Vermont State College's Board of Trustees is tasked with approving the operating and capital budgets of the schools, establishing tuition rates and fees, and reviewing existing academic programs. It's weighty stuff and not left to just anyone. On the board are a former Vermont Attorney General, several state representatives, and Governor Shumlin. And then there's Alyssa Slayman. She's a junior at Johnson State College, where she studies political science and global studies. And she joins us on the program now. Alyssa Slayman, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you for having me.
So you have just been named to the board of the Vermont State Colleges. Why is this something you wanted to do?
Well, I think that student advocacy is really important part of the college experience, and I just decided that I really wanted to be part of it and really understand the policies that were going on within the Vermont State College system and really get that student perspective heard on the board.
What did you have to do to get yourself on the board?
It was actually a pretty simple procedure, but I submitted a letter of interest about the importance of student advocacy and a resume and a few references, and then the Vermont State College's Student Association reviewed it, and then they voted between me and myself and another candidate, and then I was appointed on the board.
So tell us a little bit about what kind of time commitment this is going to be for you and what you have to do as a board member.
So it's a pretty big time commitment. There's monthly Board of Trustees meetings, and then there's also committee meetings. And I sit on the Education, Personnel, and Student Life Committee, and I'm also sitting on the search committee for the new Johnson State College president. And I'll just be working on, review all the policies and kind of try to get around to all the different Vermont State College campuses and talk with students about their concerns and kind of bring what we're talking about on the board to campuses and feel out how everyone's feeling about it and then try to piece it together and represent that view during the meetings.
That's a lot of work to have to go through. Are you still able to do all of your studies? I mean, I guess you'll find out.
Yes, I think so. Considering I'm a political science major, it kind of goes hand in hand with the work I'm doing already.
So this doesn't get you a credit, though? Some extra points then since you're a political science major?
Well, maybe. I mean, I'm sure I could make it an internship if I wanted to, but currently it's not.
So when you think about, you'd mentioned going around and talking to students and visiting the schools, how seriously do you take that role as the voice of the students? I mean, if you're the student representative, that's a pretty big deal, but it also must be hard for you to feel like you're representing all of the students when students have a multitude of voices and opinions.
It definitely is. It's hard to piece together a collaborative view of over 10,000 students, so I have to go with the majority most of the time. But I think that even though there's five different colleges and multiple campuses, I still think that the view of what people want to be heard is actually pretty similar. But I take it really seriously. I think it's like the main part of my job, and it's definitely my duty to bring that perspective to the board.
One of the things that we've been hearing over the years is how expensive the state colleges are, certainly less expensive for in-state students than UVM is, but still a burden for a lot of students who want to go to college. What's your perspective on that?
Yes, it's definitely a huge burden for all of the students at the VSC and other higher education institutions, which that's actually the biggest thing that I hear. I mean, we have a lack of state funding, and so that's one of the biggest concerns you hear from the students, and I think that we're going to have to come up with some sort of discount or something for students who decide to stay, or if they maybe if they enroll in a program that's highly needed in Vermont, maybe they could get some sort of a tuition break, because I feel students are definitely not attending college anymore, especially in Vermont, because of the high prices, and that there definitely needs to be some change there, whether it's on the state level or it's between the institutions.
And do you feel like your position on the board will give you a greater voice to be able to advocate for that kind of initiative?
I definitely think so. Myself and then also the members of the Vermont State College's Student Association, we plan to be going down to the State House quite frequently this upcoming legislative session and just really be advocating for how the funds are split up among the colleges, and then just really getting it known that we're not happy about the funding and how many high school seniors are deciding not to go to college because it might not be worth it anymore. So I think it's definitely something that needs to change, and there really needs to be that student voice almost every single week down the session for maybe something to happen.
Do you have a sense, though, I mean, now in your position of leadership here on the board, do you feel like you have to get up to speed on legislative issues and tax issues and what goes into the general fund and how much people are taxed in the state in order to be a better advocate for the kinds of funding that you want in order to know where you think it could come from?
Definitely. I think that there definitely needs to be a firm understanding among where the funds are coming from, like you said, and how it all comes into play. So I think that I really have to be well-versed on legislative bills and issues to be able to adequately advocate for better funding.
Are you well-versed in those yet?
I believe so. Last legislative session, I was actually interning with Senator William Doyle of Washington County, and I also took his class, which is a two-week intensive class, and you just observe the legislature for 2 weeks during winter break. And I think that that kind of kicked off my big interest into Vermont politics. And ever since then, I've just been down at the State House pretty frequently and just sitting in on committees and ones that interest me, and education committees, and just trying to figure out and piece it all together.
Well, so give me your specifics as you think of them now. I mean, understanding that, first of all, you're not setting policy for the state, so I'm not assuming that, you know, you have this all laid out, but you're going to be on the board with Governor Shumlin. He has made education and higher education a priority for his administration. So do you have thoughts about how you think these programs could work to help students pay back some of their loans if they stay in state, which is something you mentioned? Do you have any specific thoughts on where you'd like to see that come from and how to do it?
I don't. I mean, I definitely think something needs to be done along those lines, and hopefully maybe his administration, if reelected this year, would be looking at more things such as that, or maybe it could come from the VSC system itself, maybe proposing something like that to him or from individual colleges. I'm not sure how it all play out, but I know that it's definitely something that should be talked about.
I'm talking with Alyssa Slayman. She's a junior at Johnson State College, and she was just named to the Board of Trustees for the Vermont State Colleges. Alyssa, what else do you think of as some important challenges for the state college system in Vermont?
I think that the big issue that most of the campuses are facing is enrollment issues. Our enrollment's pretty down, and also then just retaining the students after they come. I know that a lot of students come and they think of just, say, Johnson State College maybe as a stepping stone to a bigger university like UVM. But I think one of the struggles that needs to change is that the view of the VSC needs to change. They need to be known as that four-year university that will give you everything you need, that you don't need to go to a bigger university. And I think that's an image among high school students, at least. That's the trend I saw when I attended a Vermont public school. So I think it really comes with more education and better marketing tactics.
Well, so what motivated you to go to Johnson State?
I went to Johnson State because I really enjoy the rural setting and also the small college feel. I just felt I'd have more opportunities at a smaller school and also more connections with my professors directly in a smaller classroom setting. So I just decided to pick Johnson because I felt I would just have a better experience overall and more of an in-depth experience, which I have definitely experienced.
So you're enjoying it?
I'm very much so.
You mentioned that you could try to get an internship for this, but that you think, you know, having a position on the board, being able to look at governance in educational settings could help you understand things, and that you're a political science major along as well with global studies. Do you think that serving on this board will help you in your career? Do you think about where it might help take you?
I think so. Advocacy is a really big part of my outlook on the political science major at Johnson. So I think it's definitely going to give me some good skills for my future career. I plan to do advocacy work in my future. So I think that'll give me a good base for if I want to work in Vermont politics or if I want to work internationally or something along those lines.
What kind of advocacy work are you hoping to do?
Specifically human rights in the sector of water rights. I'm really interested in international water rights, especially down in Latin America.
Well, not Latin America, but I understand, speaking of international issues, you actually have a pretty cool internship coming up next semester. You want to tell us about it?
I do. I will be interning at a nonprofit organization working on race relations in Montreal, Canada.
Wow, that sounds pretty cool. What motivated you to want to do that?
I was actually motivated by our visiting professor at Johnson State College a week or so ago. Her name's Joanne St. Louis, and she works on human rights within Canada, and she's always been an inspiration for me. And I was talking with her about possible internships in the field of human rights, and this automatically popped in her head. And considering that Montreal is just so close to us, it would just make sense that it would give me that international experience and then a really great internship.
Well, Alyssa Slayman, junior at Johnson State College, she's just been named to the Board of Trustees for the Vermont State Colleges. Alyssa, thank you very much for speaking with us, and congratulations.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that will wrap up today's show. Be sure to join us tonight for live election coverage starting at 7. We'll have national results and analysis from NPR News. And VPR reporters will be spread around the state reporting on legislative races and talking with the winners and losers of the big statewide contests. By the way, if you haven't voted yet, you can check out the Who's on My Ballot app from VPR News to get a beat on the races that you'll be voting on should you choose to vote. Thanks for listening today. I'm Jane Lindholm. We'll talk to you again soon.